Hey, I think we were talking about relationship with the regents. How would you characterize what has occurred in terms of the legislative tenor toward you? Also, perhaps commenting on the role of Scott. The role of Scott was pointed out by Humphrey as being a particularly antagonistic one. Have you seen this evolve? Is the legislature more sympathetic or more knowledgeable? How does Scott come across?
Okay, let me just a final comment on regents, and then legislature, and then Scott. I think the thing I'd like to say about the regents is that I've taken steps probably 5 times beyond what would normally be appropriate in terms of keeping this board informed. There was a reason for that. The place was in such a state of disarray, and the problems were so severe that one had to develop in the regents a sense that they were on top of things and knew what was going on. Okay, I think it's now time to begin to pull back, and I started in the last few months to do that, to pull back with the board's sense of awareness. And the reason why it's absolutely necessary is because we run the risk of creating Frankensteinian monsters by this process. And as a matter of fact, we have a couple of them now developing on the board. And that is, they are beginning to feel, because of the high level of information that they're receiving and the correspondingly close relationship to the ongoing operation, that they are good administrators and that their higher ed expertise exceeds the very people they hire to do a job. We have one right here in Fairbanks who shall go nameless, young fellow, who's now beginning to think that he only needs a couple more months training and he can become the president of a university somewhere. I think the board must come to realize that their responsibility is to review policy options brought forward by the central office, adopt policies for implementation by the central office, and try to seek to hire the best possible people through their chief executive to do the job. So, I'm sounding a kind of an alarm here that I hope the new president and the people working around him get this message and begin to back away. It's a hard thing to do, but it has to be done. Most members of the board fully understand this and are totally prepared and welcome the idea that they should have less to do. I think that some people, though, have ego needs and a high level of ego gratification required that they want to stay much more of an overt public part of this. And I'll go on record of saying, for example, the idea that the new president of the university had a press conference and sitting behind next to him was Regent Cook from Fairbanks is totally inappropriate. At best, the president of the board perhaps may have been sitting there, or another regent who was sitting in place of the president, and that should have been known and so forth. But anyway, that's the regents. In terms of the legislature, there's no doubt in my mind that one of the reasons why I was a finalist for about 5 or 6 presidencies and other jobs around the country and ultimately got the one that I've gotten was because of my relationship with the legislature. I have now probably one of the most enviable placement files in the country. Out of 60 legislators, I know by recent count, 42 by first name and well, and I know the other ones too, but not that well. I have a placement file that probably has 30 letters in it from members of the legislature who have basically said this was a university in a state of ruin, and now it's not, and it's because of this man. Now, that's not totally true, but that's what they said, and that's their perception, because the person that they saw coming down to Juneau and the person they dealt with was me. And don't misunderstand me. I'm very happy to have them think that, and I definitely think I worked hard to overcome the kinds of problems. But anyway, I think the legislature right now is waiting because there were some moves afoot by the legislature during this last session to pass resolutions asking the regents to keep me in the presidency. There were some contacts made by members of the legislature with the board members to say, don't change the presidency. I can sit here totally squeaky clean and say that I never fostered any of that, called for that kind of behavior. And as a matter of fact, a number of legislators have said to me, you can't just sit there, you're going to have to do something. And I said, no, I made a deal and I'm not going to pull a Ferguson or, you know, I go back on it. I'm out and that's it, period. So they're watching because there are a number of people that I think might want to say, see, you know, you did wrong, Borg. You had a good thing going and you reversed yourself. But specifically in answer to your question, I think the situation is very good with the legislature. What happened to us this year on the budget was not the result of hostile treatment by a legislature going after the university. It was the kind of treatment that every agency in the state got in terms of budget reductions. Some legislators were a little ticked off over the lawsuit. And as a matter of fact, Regent Banfield, I mentioned with delight, didn't want to announce the lawsuit until after the legislature went out of session. I thought that was an absolutely cheap trick and the kind of political trick that might have been, you know, good in the 40s and early 50s. And it was I that persuaded the board to, make sure that you announce your intention to sue the legislature while they're in session. I wrote letters to each individual legislator explaining that this was not a hostile lawsuit, that it was designed to clarify issues and so forth and so on. So that attempt was made. However, there were a few legislators that I think are ticked over that lawsuit. They see it as a kind of an attack on them. You're always going to have some legislators ticked off at you, but I don't think that's a long-lasting thing because even those legislators aren't in a position to come back and use the bad situation surrounding the university as an argument. There isn't a bad situation. I received nothing but compliments from Senate Finance Committee, House Finance Committee, and others down there this last session in terms of the state of affairs of the university, so I think we're in good shape there. In terms of Scott, this is probably one of the strangest kinds of situations I've ever found myself in. Dave Scott has not talked to me on the telephone or written to me since 1977 when he left here. He absolutely refuses to have any kind of contact with me at all. Now, I don't mean that in a negative way, that I'm sitting here desperately in need of contact, or I was sitting here in need of contact from Scott. It's just that there's kind of a wall of neutrality between Scott and I that neither one wants to penetrate. He does all of his things, some of them very painful to the university, in terms of dealing directly with legislators, feeding them information, half the time very good, valid observations, well staffed out, and the other time crap. But in the last analysis, the legislators, to the most part, on the finance committees are slaves to Dave Scott. There isn't a fiscal expert among them. Probably the last of the great fiscal experts on the House side passed with Steve Cooper. So they're totally dependent upon Dave. And in the last analysis, and I suppose it's easy for me to say this not being president anymore, Dave has a job to do on behalf of the legislature, and he does it, and he does it very well. The fact that he does it sometimes a little dishonestly, sometimes a little nasty, sometimes taking, you know, that extra little push that isn't necessary, that makes it painful. But he gets paid by the legislature for being their chief fiscal analyst and chief staffer. And let me tell you, as well as he gets treated by the legislature and as well as he gets paid, the first time he doesn't keep the legislature honest in terms of the university's affairs and he is found to be accountable, he's out of work. So it's easy to sit here and say Scott's a rotten, malcontent, sour graper who got fired from the university and went down there and now is taking it out on us. That's too easy. It's much more involved. The only way to beat the Scotts of the world, and they abound, you get rid of Scott and you're going to have another one in there. The only way to beat them is to get your house in such good order that even lies, half-truths, misdirected facts and whatnot cannot hold water. That's the only way to do it. And then the Scots of the world kind of dry up and blow away. And I see that happening already. What Scott was able to do down there during this session was not what Scott was able to do down there last session. And I would suspect there's every likelihood that next session it'll be even less.
You were talking about an evolving approach to the capital budget, or we go down there with one capital budget and they come back with something quite opposite. Obviously, they're doing it to meet what they perceive as their own regional needs. Is it your perception that the legislature sometimes uses the university to fund projects in municipalities that will benefit the municipality while marginally benefiting the university?
I think you're kind in using the word marginally.
I think of a hockey rink it wasn't asked for. And
well, no, at least a hockey rink, you're almost forced to get some kind of use out of it. And we'll probably develop, you know, on the Fairbanks campus and other campuses, you know, hockey teams and so forth. No, there are worse examples than that. Throwing a library in Nenana, okay? We have as much need to put a library in Nenana under the aegis of the University of Alaska as we do to put two libraries in Barrow. Only in Barrow, we're only putting up a science and instructional facility. No, I think you're kind by saying marginal. I think there are some blatant examples of facilities which have absolutely no value whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, in terms of ongoing cost and the displacement factor, in terms of what they squeezed out of the capital budget by being there in the second place, not the first, I think that they are detriments to the university. I will say, though, I think this is the last of the big years for the legislators to do that. And I think that's probably why they did it the last few years, because they know the end is coming. The end is coming when the reapportionment occurs and we have an Anchorage caucus, which is even more powerful than it is now. Then the Bush is going to have problems with their political caucus in power. The Juneau caucus sits and lives in absolute fear that the capital will move. Southeast is thinking of fish and, you know, and so forth. So this is probably a big transitional year in that regard, which is why it was so absurd. I lived in fear that the press would call me all last year and ask me about our capital budget. What could I have said? I'll tell you what I could have said. I could have said that everything we asked for has been removed with the exception of a few health and safety items that had to be on there, and that they've been substituted with seven buildings totaling some $20 million that we had, seven building projects that we have absolutely no use for, nor did we ask for. Tolk, Delta Junction, Nenana, Barrow, Dillingham, I guess, and one other.
Changing it a little bit, how would you characterize the relationship with the faculty? I know that some faculty have been critical of you. The perception I had sometimes is in the revision of the policy manual, Tom may have been writing some of the policy from a terms of a staff attorney rather than one who had, say, more of a joint responsibility to protect the rights of each administration and the faculty.
Okay. I think you're stepping a little too far over a line when you suggest that this university council has been hired to protect the interests of faculty. University council, by job description and by board policy, is the counsel to the policy, to the board, and to the president. And when the president and the board's interests conflict, he's the counsel to the board, and the president must go out and get counsel. There's nothing in there that says counsel is around to protect the interests of faculty. Obviously, we're all here to protect the interests of everybody, and so that is going to be a large part of his responsibility. A. B. Council doesn't write policy to the extent that most faculty think he does. Council is the last one to review policy because policy comes forward and gets batted around and then it gets checked for its legal interpretation. Now, that is not consistently so. There are some policies which are sent into council for his drafting because they're in his area of responsibility, a lot of them in personnel. And as you know, that's his area of responsibility. Faculty is going to fault me or anyone else when they see something that they cherish and think is valuable go down the tube. All I can say is that I have been consistently fair and I've consistently tried to do what in the long pull was best for the university, irrespective of how painful. Let me give you an example. The promotion committee, I think that's headed by Roberts, right? Professor Roberts?
I forgot.
Tenure promotion. He sent me a letter and said that last year was the first year that the recommendations from the promotion committee, you know, the statewide promotion committee, had been followed by the president, and that's why they were coming back this year complete same committee, nobody quitting in anger or anything, because it was the first time in senior faculty's recollection that the president had followed their recommendations and the policies where he didn't, you know, where it could go either way. I recruited, hired Woody Thrombley as VP Academic Affairs and brought him up here, and that committee denied him tenure, okay? And I didn't reverse it, because they're right, okay? So no one will ever be able to fault me with not doing what was fair, even when sometimes it was damn painful to look into the vice president's eyes that you hired and say, my friend, I'm sorry, but you're not getting tenure because the committee has recommended against it. And they're more right than the arguments that we could summon up in defense of it, and certainly the emotional ones. All right. Most of the faculty, I think, who are you could characterize as detractors, I think they justifiably resent the manner in which I became president of the university. Didn't follow the normal pattern of things. Well, the obvious response is this place didn't follow any of the normal patterns either, so much for that. But in a way, they're kind of right. There wasn't a big massive search, and Diebold didn't emerge as the best of 20 or 50 or 80 or 100. The time for me to experience the joys of that it would be on my next assignment, where I was at least found to be the best out of 214, which is a hell of a lot better than, 50 or 60. But I understand that position. Their arguments about the doctorate, I think, are dangerously self-serving, to the point where they would be embarrassing. I mean, my God, the last five doctorates that headed this university practically put it into a hole from which it couldn't extricate itself. Now, that's not saying that having the doctorate is a bad thing, but I think it does suggest the possibility that having the doctor doesn't, sway the balance one way or the other in terms of your capabilities. Plus the fact that I've never gotten into the business of saying this publicly, although the temptation has been overwhelming. I'll take my doctoral work without the dissertation at Rutgers University over about 60% of the doctorates, earned doctorates in this university, and I've gone down and seen where they come from. So, there are doctorates and there are doctorates and so forth. So I think it's a question of a lot of people want something to hang a complaint on, and that's a good one. And, I'm prepared to take that. And the second one is, I think if you work really hard to get something for yourself, it's, kind of hard for you to see somebody else not have it and have a lot of success, and so you have to kind of cheap shot them. But the notion that if I write my dissertation on some esoteric phase of labor studies or the collective bargaining process, and I will emerge from that a better administrator in a year and a half, That notion has never occurred to me. I am as good or bad as I'm ever going to be right now, and the doctorate isn't going to matter. And as a matter of fact, the sabbatical, which I have a signed contract for, which I never wanted, I only wanted the security of not being an unemployed president come July, I never entertained the thought. This personally, myself and my wife, never entertained the thought of going on sabbatical unless I was absolutely forced to go on sabbatical. I simply could not lounge about for a year, pretending to be steeped in work related to my research, for 10 hours a day. I think that's a lot of crap. I'm a doer. I would much prefer to administer and get paid for it. And if I can write a dissertation in the next couple of years while doing that, I certainly intend to. But faculty detractors is something you're going to have, in this job, particularly in this place right here and now, no matter what. Now, our current president, our new president, will be honeymooning for a while. There'll be a lot of kissy-poo and huggy-bunchies going on for probably 3 months. The session is going to open. The real deal test of the metal will begin to come forward there, and the honeymoon will pass. The honeymoon period in higher ed used to be a year or two for presidents back 5-10 years ago. Now, that's about as long as they last. So it's a tough business, and I said in an interview with the Anchorage Daily News when I was appointed president, if you think with this job, there comes a bulletproof room that kind of follows you around and protects you, then don't step into it, because you're going to be out there very visible, and you're going to not make friends if you do what has to be done, which incidentally was the board's wisdom, in quotes, for creating a presidency of 2 years duration, because they felt that, especially after watching Ferguson, and I've said this enough times, I'm sure it's been quoted, that if you are overly concerned about self-preservation, you're not going to do what has to get done. Now, I don't think that's true, but that's what they believe. And I can understand them believing that. I probably had more personnel changes in 20 months than any given 10-year history of any university in the history of universities in this country. Now, I certainly have not checked the accuracy of that statement, but I'd be pretty convinced if we prorated size. The job had to be done. You had to get rid of the people that went, even if you're going to be president for 20 years here or 3 months. You could not have a John Lindauer in Anchorage. You could not have a Max Hullinger or a Ferguson, you know, and so forth. So I don't have this hint of bitterness, you know. Any assaults run on me by faculty or anybody else, I think, were standard procedure. I might have had a slight increase in temperature at the given point in time, but it subsided quickly enough. This place has given, probably in the long run, well, I don't know, time will tell, as much to me as I've given to it. And there's no bitterness. I didn't think I had a bad deal. A lot of members of the press have constantly said to me, well, you know, how about this only a short appointment, a two-year appointment, you know. That was it. I could have said no last February, or not last February, a year ago February. I could have said to the board, no, I don't want to take an appointment for 20 months or whatever. I didn't. So here I am.
So you see that a lot of the confrontation or difficulties you've had are essentially part of the political process of living and governing, and say with faculty that they've been, you know, clash of interests.
It's a sense of balance. I don't think there's been an overwhelming amount of problems for me. I made it clear very early on that if, for example, you're going to have if I'm going to have a convocation, I'm not going to go in there and show you a United Way film. I mentioned for humor, as your chancellor did. I'm going to go in there, and you can question and answer me until you get tired of questioning me. And when I answer you, I'm going to tell you what I think. Well, I think I've stepped on some toes, and if I had to say on balance, I would say that it's been 90% effective and 10% there have been some detractors. And I think that's a healthy estimate for the detractors. It's pretty hard. It'd be pretty hard for anyone. And let me tell you, you got some classics on this campus. It would be pretty hard for anyone to say to me, after the last 2 years that I've put in, and the state of affairs of this university when I took over, and the state of affairs now, it'd be pretty hard for a faculty member, or anybody, and we're not just climbing on faculty, how much can they detract? You know? Where's the cash flow problem and the deficit? And where are all the, you know, where are the dishonest people that were here working before? Where's the credibility of the university in terms of it being zero 2 years ago? You know, somebody wants to try to take a crack at that. It's much easier to be a professor of philosophy, you know, especially a full professor teaching about 2 days a week, and to breeze on this campus Wednesday morning and take a couple of shots at the president, and, you know, teach another class Thursday and then split, and then get 5 months off in the summer. Those kinds of detractors, I can handle them.
Is there anything else that you can think of that you'd like to touch on?
I can't imagine anything that we have to no, except that I've enjoyed it.
Good. I really appreciate your taking the time to come over.
I appreciated doing it because, you know, this has been a curious 5 or 6 year period here, and if I could add a little sense of some semblance of the order of things for that period where I had a stake, I'm how thankful I could do it.
Well, in going back over it, I kept thinking, God, it can't all have happened in this short a period of time. You know, jeez. Well, I think that's about the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right.